The first thing I want you to know about me is that none of this is hypothetical for me. I had a history of heart disease in my family. It is very, very serious. My grandfather was one of those early heart transplants. It got us an additional 7 years with him. Before that, he had a triple bypass, high cholesterol for years. High cholesterol supposedly runs in my family, and that was decades ago before they even lowered the cholesterol, standard numbers, which have moved the needle several times lower in the last couple of decades. So that's an interesting journey as well. If you haven't seen the data on that, it's worth looking up because our standards for what is considered high cholesterol versus low cholesterol has changed a lot. So none of this is hypothetical for me. And you got to remember, I was really, really sick for years and told I was not going to be well, that I would, live a very, very constricted life, and it would be about disease management, and then I would probably die young. So that's fun to hear, isn't it? And I'm sure I'm not alone here today, that many of you are walking a very serious health journey. It's got your full attention. And others, hopefully you're here earlier in your health journey, that you want to stay ahead of everything and fine-tune, and you're curious about your body before it hits a state of crisis. If so, I salute you. That means you're way ahead of most humans in the developed world because we've been so divorced from our own bodies in our culture that it could take us a while to catch on to the fact that our bodies are asking for help. So that's why I'm so passionate about doing what we do, is to make sure that you get the information you need to support your body and to take care of it before it hits a crisis point, or to walk it back from a crisis on your own and maintain your own health sovereignty and not be dependent on a system that has very real limitations. For me, it was very confusing to discover years and years into my chronic illness journey that my liver was overloaded and that I had all the profile of a non-alcoholic fatty liver, and that actually could be related to my serious digestive issues, my energy issues, my brain fog, and my food sensitivities, my joint pain, all of that. I didn't realize that because liver issues never showed up on my labs. So it's probably why I'm so passionate about sharing this information with you, because that was actually true for my husband as well, that he had a severely impacted liver due to his early exposure to mold as a child and due to his early use of pharmaceuticals as a teenager. One of them was Accutane, for example. And it's amazing what certain prescriptions can do to you and do to your liver and compromise your efficiency there. And then it can show up in all different systems in your body, and your cholesterol is distorted, and your skin is trying to act as a second liver, and you're brain foggy, or you're having hormone dysregulation, and you're wondering why. And it takes too long to put the pieces together. So I see it as part of my job to connect those dots with you earlier so that you don't have to suffer for as long as we did, honestly. For both of us, we had very, very different looking symptoms. But liver overload was a major issue for us. And we were able to resolve our own health issues at the rate that we did the deep dive liver work. Doesn't mean that you get to skip the other parts of healing. It's not about that. Although it is a great shortcut, I have to say, because the more you work directly on destagnating the liver, the faster everything else can speed up in the body. So we'll talk about that today too. But here's a way to assess for yourself, just from the symptomology, how much this resonates for you. You may have lab work that says, I have high cholesterol, I have high LDL, my doctor's concerned, they want to put me on a statin, or I'm already on a statin, but I don't want to be on a statin. I want you to always come to the symptomology first and pair that with labs and understand the limitations of each so that you're really looking as holistically as possible at your body. And looking at the symptomology is free. So many of you have already named some of the issues today that can go undetected for decades as part of a liver issue. Somebody already talked about nausea and heartburn and fatigue and gas and bloating. And that's amazing if you've already connected that to liver issues. It means you're ahead of the curve. You'll also note that very common are histamine sensitivities, food sensitivities, difficulty digesting fats. And the weight issue is very confusing because many people struggle to release excess weight when they have high cholesterol or an overloaded liver or both. But actually, some people struggle to maintain a healthy weight and get up to a healthy enough weight to have a resilient body. So either or could be the case. And I know that's really confusing, but it's just the way the cookie crumbles. And there's so many factors to that. You'll also notice that people who have liver issues and high cholesterol often have a compromised immune system, which is really interesting. And it makes sense if you remember that the liver plays a major, major role in the immune system itself. Not as only is it doing indirect things like producing a lot of your lymphatic fluid, which is an essential part of your immune system, flushing out the waste and debris from deep in the lymphatics, deep in the tissues, but also directly fighting infections for the body. And cholesterol is a great tool for that, I have to say. It plays a key role, which we're going to unpack today. It's really fascinating when you start to look at this from a different perspective and decide, I'm going to be my own health detective instead of waiting for somebody else to just say, this number on this lab means take this pill. You are so much more complex and your body is so much more magnificent than that. And it requires an understanding, even a basic one, of your own physiology, so that you can take control. So today we are going to focus on the cholesterol story you were never told. Why high cholesterol isn't always the villain that it's been made out to be, and why your liver may be the missing link. In this workshop, you'll learn why cholesterol and blood pressure patterns often reflect metabolic and hepatic signaling problems, as bile stagnation, insulin resistance, fatty liver, inflammation, and also what we think are critical steps to do next. You got to remember, though, this is not medical advice, and this is not encouragement to make changes to medications. So please always consult with your doctor before making changes to your own health protocol. I'm not anti-statins. I just want you to understand how your body works so that you feel more in control over, you know, how to protect yourself. We think of cholesterol as a tool that the body uses. And so we want to ask, anytime cholesterol is high, is it a problem in and of itself, or is it the firefighter that's getting sent to put out the fire? We used to call it like blaming high cholesterol. It's like blaming the plumber that comes to fix the pipes. There's a problem in the pipes. Do we want to ignore the problem in the pipes, or do we want to send the plumber in? It's a good short-term strategy. It's just an incomplete one. So we just want to consider that. And I know that so many people are confused about cholesterol and blood pressure. Like, my blood pressure won't budge, even though I'm doing all the right things. My labs are normal, but I don't feel good. Or statins lowered my numbers, but nothing else changed. And it's because these are often metabolic and liver signaling issues, not necessarily isolated heart problems in and of themselves. Cholesterol is not a bad thing. It's a tool. It's a biological tool. It's not a toxin. It's not toxic to the body itself. You have to remember that cholesterol is required for cell membrane structure, which every cell in your body has to have. We want to eat healing fats. So what would healing fats be? Let's call them out in the chat. Let's teach each other. Healing fats would be, you would do animal-based healing fats, right? So like clean grass-fed ruminant animals are a great source of healing fats. What else would be a healing fat? Coconut oil? Exactly. Yes. Tallow, ghee? Exactly. Absolutely. Avocados? Yes. Salmon? Yes. Exactly. Black felt, as long as it's not rancid? Absolutely, Robin. So if you wanted to do flax oil and use that as a tool, you want to make sure that you're getting cold-pressed flax oil, and it's not the industrial ground up flax oil, because it's going to get oxidized and rancid and there's going to be some contamination in there. So that's just something to consider. Olive oil. Absolutely, Christina. Yes. First pressed, cold pressed, extra virgin olive oil. Absolutely. We just want to be really intentional about where we choose these items from. So it's not all fats are bad. That's not true. The Franken fats are hard on the body. The fake ones that we have made in a laboratory, those are really, really hard on your liver to try to break down. And they absolutely compromise the body's ability to make healthy cholesterol and also utilize cholesterol well to build up these resilient cell membranes throughout the body. And it absolutely is a factor in how fast you age and how good you feel. How much inflammation are you feeling in the body? So that's one key takeaway from today, is take a fresh look at your own healing fats. We want to remember that we often get scared away from fat when, you know, we start to see signs of cardiopulmonary stress, liver overload, the sensitivity to fats because you might have had a gallbladder attack, things like that. Or you just don't tolerate heavy meals well anymore. That was me for a long time. Oh, I just need to eat light. I just want to eat tiny, tiny meals. I guess I just must be delicate. No, it was my overloaded liver and I just could not keep up. And so it didn't feel good when I tried to eat heavy meals, but I didn't realize what I needed to do was build bile faster, thin out the bile, and excavate out the bile sludge. And yes, the gallstones that had built up over years and actually decades. And this started to become a problem for me in my 20s. The bill is coming due for us, certainly earlier and earlier. I like to think about this as I take a gentle step away from genetics because we often go to those first in allopathic medicine, like, it's just your genes. Okay, but do you have control over your genes? Not really, not last time I checked. But you do have control over your diet. You do have control over your stress levels. You do have control over your ability to design your own detox to build bile faster, thin out the blood, the bile, and also to flush out that junky sludge and gallstone stuff that we'll take a look at today. All that is a really long way of saying cholesterol is a requirement. It is not optional. It's not bad. It's a wonderful, wonderful tool. We've got to have it for cell membrane structure. We've got to have fats to build healthy cholesterol. We just need the right fats. And we don't want to be scared of fats. We also absolutely require cholesterol for hormone production. So everybody who's feeling the pinch with hormone dysregulation in this day and age, want to remember that we still need cholesterol for those and to not be afraid of them. Cortisol, estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, these are essential for us to feel strong enough to function. We also have to have cholesterol for vitamin D synthesis. And yes, you guessed it, because bile is my favorite thing to talk about. That and parasites, I guess. Well, and mold. Okay, so I have a few favorites. But bile acid production is dependent upon having enough cholesterol to build bile salts. So bile is made in large part from cholesterol itself and compounding that with key amino acids and compounds. You can't make bile fast enough if you don't have enough cholesterol. And conversely, if you have too much cholesterol or your doctor saying, hey, it's too high, I'm concerned. What we want to do is actually look first at bile flow because your liver might just be overloaded and reduced in efficiency. And it's not going to show that on your liver enzymes. And I'll show you that chart today so that you can unpack that for yourself. So if your body is making or holding onto cholesterol, it's usually responding to stress, not malfunctioning, because we actually need it for these things. Let's consider first where cholesterol comes from before we talk about how to solve this problem for ourselves, right? Cholesterol, you guessed it, is primarily made in the liver. Cholesterol synthesis occurs mainly in hepatocytes, in those liver cells, built via the mevalonate pathway, and production increases under stress, under inflammation, insulin resistance, and toxin load. And also, I would add infection load. So if you are somebody who is dealing with silent chronic infections anywhere in the body, your body will use, as a strategy, it has the potential to use more cholesterol to try to support and send resources. Isn't that interesting? It can be a sign that your body is actually fighting off high infection loads. And actually, many of us as adults are carrying silent infections in the sinuses, in the lungs, deep in the lymphatics. Maybe your armpits are a little swollen or tender to the touch. Maybe you're carrying a little bit of extra weight on the belly, and it's not actually all fat. It could be partially fat, but might be some extra lymphatic fluid stuck there too, trying to dilute a stressed out, infected environment. So it's just something to remember that this is often overlooked until it finally gets to like a really acute stage. Most of us have like the silent chronic toxin and infection load that we're just kind of putting up with. But one of the ways we put up with it is by producing more cholesterol, or conversely, you might be stuck with a higher cholesterol level because your body's not able to use enough of it to make the bile that it really wants to out of that cholesterol. So it's important to remember. You also have to understand that dietary cholesterol plays a much smaller role in deciding what your cholesterol levels are for the body than liver signaling does itself. Liver signaling is the defining factor, and your liver is determining, hey, how high should my cholesterol be based on the infections it's getting told about elsewhere in the body, the stress that it's getting told about from your nervous system, the toxin load that it's interpreting and trying to filter out for you. And yes, absolutely, insulin resistance. So since cholesterol is a main ingredient of bile, we need to understand a little bit more about bile if we're going to talk about cholesterol and liver overload. It's like one of the biggest ingredients for bile acids themselves. So bile acids are actually also formed in the liver. So lots happening in the liver here. And what is bile for? It's a gross word, but it's has so many magical properties for your body. I hope that you adore your bile by the end of this and you get curious about how to support bile flow and build bile faster and release bile faster because it really is so magical. Here's how it works. When you think about it, and this makes total sense, your bile is made in your liver from cholesterol and also other amino acids, right? And the bile is supposed to be formed in these solids as bile salts and then suspended in very delicate chemistry in liquid format so that the bile can pick up toxins that have been processed by the liver and carry them out down into the gallbladder as gallbladder holds the bile, perfects the pH, condenses it so that it's really useful and ready to go to meet the bolus of food with stomach acid and cool it down so that the small intestine can go to work and do its thing. And of course, the pancreas is playing a role with that. The gallbladder and the pancreas meet together with their secretions, right, ideally at the same time. Sodium bicarbonate and enzymes from the pancreas and bile from the gallbladder. So bile is supposed to be in that process carrying out toxins, carrying out hormones like estrogen once it's been, you know, degraded, taking out the broken down histamine once it's been dealt with by the liver as well. Oh, interesting. Histamine. We'll talk about that more later, right? We want to get the stuff out of the body, but if the bile flow is sluggish for any reason or congested, cholesterol clearance by extension is impaired because cholesterol making was step one of this process, right? And if you cannot use enough of it to make enough bile to move out the sluggish stuff, move out the toxins, move out the old hormones and clear this junk, well, there's nowhere for the stuff upstream, all this cholesterol to go. It will build up. Your body will be holding on to more. Hey, we got to catch up on this bile production, this bile flow. Let's hold on to more cholesterol because it seems like we need it. So it can be considered, I would say the harshest thing I would say about high cholesterol is that maybe it's a traffic jam, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's overproducing. I wouldn't necessarily call it a mistake by the body. I don't think of the body as something that makes mistakes. I think our job is to understand at a profound and deep level to the best of our ability what the body's trying to do and respect those instincts and try to work with them instead of trying to override them. That's what stewardship of the body is. That's what naturopathy really is stewardship of the body, not trying to override it. So what standard labs ranges are missing in this whole conversation, you know, when we're talking about normal cholesterol ranges, we're forgetting how important it is to use cholesterol as a signal. Hey, is it time to look at insulin resistance? Do I maybe have a developing fatty liver? Is there more inflammation than I realized and it's time to take a deeper look? Oh, what about thyroid signaling? Hey, because we know when the thyroid is slow, so even subclinical hypothyroidism means slower bile flow. Isn't that weird? Because that little trap door at the bottom of your gallbladder's little bile duct to dump out into the small intestines, cute little trap door. It's called the sphincter of Oddi. If your thyroid is slow, it actually tells the sphincter of Oddi to constrict and also slow down and not be able to release bile as efficiently as you would want to. So right when you want to be the best at letting go of bile, you have a little bit of a struggle to do so efficiently. So that's really important to understand. So the same cholesterol number, also we want to add some nuance to this, can mean very different things in different bodies as well. So what LDL actually represents, LDL is really like a surrogate. It's like a measuring stick of like, okay, like a barometer, but it's not a root cause of health issues itself. LDL particles transport cholesterol to tissues. And yes, they do increase during inflammation. They also increase during oxidative stress and metabolic dysfunction, but they're not the root cause of those. So it's really important to make sure, again, we're not blaming the fireman for going and seeking out the smoke. Where is that fire? Let's go try to deal with it and sort this out ourselves. Because cholesterol is bringing key resources to these areas in the body that really desperately need some support. LDL can contribute, yes, to new plaque formation, but LDL elevation is often downstream of metabolic stress. So we often see metabolic stress first, metabolic dysfunction, overload from toxins, maybe some exposure to mold snuck in for a period of time, maybe your pathogens are starting to overgrow and getting more distorted, and your microbiome doesn't have enough key diversity to protect you. Maybe your immune system is struggling to keep up with some of those sneaky infections that can just kind of linger silently in the tissues, just little pockets throughout the body. Those would all be good reasons for LDL elevation. So that's a really important distinction that we want to make here. Lowering LDL, just pushing that number down, doesn't actually fix why LDL rose in the first place. So if we're going to be root cause detectives and take control over our own health journeys and really embrace the concepts like we do at Detox Nation of naturopathy and really root cause resolution, stewardship of the body, then we have to ask better questions. Why did this rise in the first place? Cholesterol alone is not a good barometer of how you're doing with your health. It's actually a very incomplete marker, isn't it? So LDL-C is not consistently predictive of mortality in older adults. We can see that extensively in the research. And risk varies wildly based on different metabolic contexts. Triglycerides, insulin, inflammation, those often actually matter more. It doesn't mean that cholesterol never matters. It just means cholesterol needs to be interpreted in this larger context. Again, I just want to underscore this. I'm not telling you to flush your statins down the toilet. I'm not telling you to break up with your doctor. You know, it's nothing like that. Let's be safe and smart here. I just want you to understand that there's a deeper reasoning that the body has for each of these markers to potentially be driven up. And I want you to start seeing how the dots fit together for you. So we also want to remember that when the pharmaceutical companies are trying to sell a product, they're going to, of course, present it in the most beneficial light. That's their job, or that's legally what they're allowed to do. We're one of only a couple countries in the entire world that still allows them to do that. But they are allowed to do that here, and so they will present their products in the best possible light. What does that mean for us? It means that we end up getting non-legally relevant terms like relative risk reduction that doesn't actually have any legal standing to say that. So relative risk reduction is what they often quote when they're talking about statins. And what they mean is there's a 50% reduction in the rate of the risk, essentially, towards cardiac events. But what that means in real time is that risk in populations goes from 2% down to 1%. So we're actually talking about a 1% reduction. And yes, relative to the number 2%, 1% is 50% less, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you, out of getting saddled with this pharmaceutical, are experiencing a 50% increase in health and safety or a 50% decrease in cardiac events, because you're not. This, we're talking about a 1% shift. That's what the research shows. So I just want you to know what that term means, relative risk reduction. And I want you to apply that awareness and that reasoning, you know, as you evaluate your health choices. They like to do that, and they're legally allowed to. So of course they're going to. So we want to just be aware this is a 1% reduction in potential risk and cardiac events. And yes, they do have limitations, and every pharmaceutical comes with side effects. We just need to acknowledge that, right? So even if you want to stay on a statin and you feel really good about it, and you think it's the right move for you, we also want to remember that they don't restore hepatic metabolic flexibility. That just means, is your liver getting healthier and more flexible and more efficient? It doesn't actually restore that at all. It just pushes the number down on the lab. It just reduces the amount of cholesterol and available supply for you to try to throw at these problems that your body's trying to solve. They don't increase bile flow, and they also don't increase insulin sensitivity or restore it. And they don't restore detoxification capacity. We're going to have to do that from a different angle. So whether or not you want to be on a statin or stay on it as you uncover these different root cause factors for yourself, just remember, we're still going to have to, no matter what, look at these other things and tackle them from a different angle. Hepatic metabolic flexibility, bile flow, insulin sensitivity, and detoxification capacity. This is really important to take a more global view of what liver overload actually means. Liver overload is not liver failure. You don't have to get scared about it. It's just a functional capacity issue. It's a state where hepatic input exceeds the liver's ability to transform and package and eliminate, and of course, signal metabolically, because your liver is an essential part, not just of your digestive tract itself, in the sense that your liver is helping you to digest your proteins, your fats, your carbs, literally every aspect of your food, including the toxins that snuck in on there. But your liver is also signaling to the rest of your body how metabolically healthy, like cellular metabolism. How fast can we metabolize things body-wide? How old should we behave? How much inflammation should we have? At a cellular level, body-wide, your liver is sharing really important signals based on its own experience. So in a way, because it's so regenerative and so powerful and such a linchpin for all these critical processes in the body, it's really like your first and your last line of defense in so many ways. And it's regulating your body's ability to understand and clean up the terrain everywhere else. Because if your liver is blocked, you're going to be slower in dealing with that in the rest of your tissues. Because where's it going to go? Where are all those toxins going to go if they have to be filtered out by the liver? We want to consider that and really with fresh eyes look at like, okay, knowing that, knowing how critical this is as my linchpin, my largest traditional organ, it's working so hard for me. And we also know it's extremely resilient. This thing can regrow itself in just a few weeks. That's insane when you think about it. From just a small portion of the liver, it can regrow itself in 6 weeks. That's crazy. It's really interesting when you pair that awareness with how persistent liver issues are in our lived experience. It's because if nothing changes, nothing changes, right? If our inputs don't change, the results don't change. Let's look at those major inputs, right? Like look at things like excess fructose, because fructose is the hardest of sugars on the liver. I promise I'm not the food police. I just want you to be aware of the different factors. So yes, excess fructose and refined carbs. Duh, of course, we're having like an international reckoning about the way we have been socialized to eat over the last few decades. This is not a surprise to you. You're smart. So, okay, what else? Major inputs of drive overload. Oh yeah, chronic insulin signaling. Because you know what? When the liver gets overloaded and slows down in these basic metabolic processes, the pancreas ramps up and goes, oopsies, the liver's not there. I'm knocking. I'm sending signals, but it's not getting them. Those receptor sites are not as efficient as they used to be. I know I'll start working overtime. But that makes a chronic flare cycle too of inflammation. And then we're going to have to unwind that together. Yeah, okay, alcohol in excess, true. That's another major input. You know that. You don't need me to explain that. But this is where it gets more interesting to me. Endotoxins from gut permeability. What are endotoxins? Endotoxins are endogenous to the body. They are made by pathogens. So whether they're itty bitty little bacteria or big scary gut worms and everything in between, we have the ability for these creatures to be producing all the time this inflammatory waste. Yes, I'm talking about parasite poop and pee. That's what I'm talking about. Because your parasites, your pathogen overgrowths, your biofilms, all that stuff, they are inhaling, they're eating food that really should be at your table. Parasites, like the definition of them is like they're living off of you. They eat at your table first. They steal your micronutrients from you. They drive your dietary behaviors, right? And yes, that means they also poop and pee as soon as they ingest what they wanted. So that material is very, very inflammatory to you. It's ammonia, it's different aldehydes, and yes, various toxins. Once you actually acknowledge that, you have to remember that the liver is going to have to process that junk just as if it was a toxicant from any other source. It just adds to the load. And then we got to consider, oh yeah, there's the hormone recirculation part too, because your liver is crucial in dealing with hormones in terms of converting them, like for T4 to T3 for the thyroid. That's happening for the thyroid in the liver. But it's also about estrogen. Can you break down estrogen fast enough and efficiently enough in the liver the way you're supposed to? Can you break down histamine as efficiently as you're supposed to in the liver? If you have any issues with that whatsoever, it's probably not the hormone's fault. That's at the end of the stream. You go upstream to discover, oh, it's probably those toxins that we're getting exposed to in our food, air, and water every day that you did not consent to. That is not your fault. You got sold a line, just like all of us, that this food, air, and water is safe. These clothes are safe. You know, these building materials are safe. And just because it's not your fault, though, doesn't mean that anybody else can fix it for you. We still have to go in and clean up the sludge. And we can do that by thinning out the bile. We can do that by speeding up the excretion process for the liver, returning it to efficiency once more. But in order to do that, we have to first acknowledge that these were the blockages. These were the building blocks to that liver overload that led to all that stress signaling, that led to distortions and those lacerations in the veins, in the tissues, the disruption in the gut lining, and indeed every other organ lining. What makes a great patch for those problems? Oh yeah, cholesterol. Cholesterol is a great patch for those distortions and disruptions and all those linings throughout our body. So yeah, your plumber is going to try to use that as a patch. That's okay. We can just start offloading this stuff at a pace that feels right for you. This can be very, very doable. And so I just want to encourage you, as we're talking about these different factors, when you have an overloaded liver, it's extremely common to feel impatient and brain foggy, to feel easily irritated. And you might even be directing that at me right now, which I try to take not personally, because all I want is for everybody to be able to heal themselves. But that's okay if you feel overwhelmed by this. It doesn't mean you have to do an overwhelming protocol. You can actually ease into these solutions with gentle steps, no matter how sensitive you are. That's the good news. So just know that that's the truth at the end of this. That's the light at the end of the tunnel, is this is still all doable and it's not too late. And it wasn't even your fault to begin with. Maybe you ate, some extra carbs. Oh, well, so sue you. You know, like, that's not, you should be resilient enough to enjoy that from time to time, right? None of us are perfect. I'm not the food police. I'm not here to shame you for any choices. I just want you to know why it might not feel good when we're trying to reach for things that used to be, comforting, and then realize we don't have that capacity to enjoy them anymore. That second glass of wine doesn't feel so hot on an overloaded liver, with extra cholesterol. Maybe even that first glass of wine just isn't even worth it anymore, just because of the way you'll feel the next day. And that comes down to all of this adding up under the surface. So we don't want to blame cholesterol and just be like, oh, that number is yucky. I wonder why I feel bad all over here with all these other things, but there's no relationship, right? There's absolutely a relationship. They're deeply interconnected. They're deeply intertwined. And the same gentle inputs can help to unwind all of this for you. That's the good news, right? The lipogenesis of fat made in the liver is actually a big part of this. We're going to see impaired bile acid synthesis and flow when we have these major inputs driving overload. We're going to see a reduced detoxification capacity. So right when you need detoxification to be as efficient as possible, it's less efficient than it should be. And that's kind of the catch-22 of the body, isn't it? Right when you need energy the most to do the repair work and the detox, you have the least access to it. All this is to say, labs can easily miss this stuff, because this labs that look at toxin overload, the labs that look at slow hormone processing, the labs that look at histamine and histamine overload are not the same labs that we run to look at the liver. They're all very separate panels and separate modes of thought as well. And they're certainly not going to show up on a basic, blood work panel where you're going to look and like, oh, take a quick look at your cholesterol. It's just, it's not all in one place. Not the way the industry works right now. So we have to go look for it. We have to go grab that information. Or we can just go straight to the symptomology and say, yep, I know I lived in mold in the past. Yep. I know I'm more sensitive to fats. Yep. I know I'm not dealing with chemicals as well as I used to because I get rashy or irritated when I'm around those yucky fake, candles and all that stuff. Yep. I'm convinced. Let's just give me a liver detox protocol. I'll just do it and see what happens. So you can do that. You can do a deep dive and keep running lab after lab after lab, or you can just go straight to the bile thinning and bile movement and excavation of the issue. It's totally up to you, and I support either approach, whatever feels right to you. So here's why labs often miss this stuff. AST and ALT measure cell damage. So like what has happened after the fact, they don't measure function or efficiency in the liver. They don't manage bile flow, and they don't current just general capacity of the liver to multitask essentially. And you can have severe metabolic dysfunction with totally normal enzymes. That was me. I was down to 3 foods. Oh my God, it was horrible. I had unlivable GERD and all that heartburn stuff, acid reflux, all of that stuff, all the bloating, all of the distress and brain fog around it. Like, it was a nightmare to navigate what could I eat in a given day, because I felt like I was going to get punished no matter what I try. Anybody ever felt like that? Like your body's against you? I promise you it's not. It's on your side. It wants to feel good. But if you don't know what the signals mean, it can feel deeply personal. It can feel like, why are you betraying me? It's very frustrating. I know. So I totally get that. I just want you to understand the science underneath it. So labs aren't even checking for that, right? I mean, ALT, AST, like this is not how to measure all this stuff. So functional congestion is going to precede signs of structural disease. So by the time your liver enzymes are elevated, you've already been feeling the stress of this for years. It's one of those classic examples of you don't feel good, but your labs say you're fine, or your labs say, oh, they're a little off. I'm a little worried about your cholesterol. Let's go on a statin and then let's, you know, we'll keep an eye on it. Well, but wait a minute. There's probably a lot of stuff happening under the surface that you could reverse at home and gently so this doesn't keep going in the wrong direction, right? So ALT reflects hepatocyte membrane damage. It does not show bile stagnation, toxin overload, or mitochondrial dysfunction. It's not designed for that. That's not what that marker does. We're also looking at AST, right? On a normal liver panel. Great. But that's looking at cellular injury. So like liver, muscle, heart. Again, very helpful to know, but it's not showing you if you have slow detox or gallbladder congestion. There's no way you could see that from that marker. ALP, similar theme here, guys. You can see some bile duct irritation when it's become really severe over time, but it's not going to show you early bile thickening or like that sluggish flow. Remember that earlier when we talked about bile acids being suspended in liquid form in very delicate chemistry and how easy it is for those to drop out and get sluggish, slow moving, viscous, that means sticky in the bile ducts once they're exposed to chemicals, heavy metals, molds, things like that, that are inflammatory and distort the flow. That's a bummer, right? We can look at total bilirubin as well. And yes, that's great for understanding heme breakdown and severe obstructions. Absolutely. But it's not going to show you subclinical cholestasis or bile sludge. Albumin, similar thing. It'll show you advanced synthetic failure, but it won't show you functional stress or inflammation in general. And PT, similar thing, clotting factor synthesis. It doesn't show you those early detox bottlenecks. This is what's often happening under the surface, even when your liver labs look normal or they're slightly off. This is the stuff that your liver and gallbladder make when you have a hard time, when your bile ducts aren't moving with clarity and ease and flow, if your bile cannot get produced fast enough by cholesterol. So if cholesterol can't efficiently get made into bile fast enough and the bile flow can't flow fast enough down those 2,000 miles of delicate bile ducts in the liver, dump out through the biliary tree, boom, get stored in the gallbladder and then flush out into the small intestine. That's a really big journey for most bile particles. That's a really long road. And if for any reason you get slowed down along the way from infections or from toxicants that distort that chemistry and slow things down, yeah, you're going to start making some junk. And sometimes it's not this exciting. You know, you don't always get to see fireworks in the toilet. These are student releases. This is a client here who was very unwell. He had advanced Lyme and it took him a while to figure out, oh yeah, in part that's because my bile ducts got slowed down so much from living in mold for years and not realizing it. And you can see that some of these even look older than others. Some of them look softer. Some of them are squishable. See that? Versus other ones look quite calcified. Like this looks quite calcified, doesn't it? That's interesting, right? Most of this stuff wouldn't even show up on a scan because it's not dense enough. It's mostly made of cholesterol by default because that's what your liver has an excess of when it is stressed. And it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? But like, for example, the upper left here, being excess of bilirubin, you know, darker brown stones can point to some pathogen issues. The green is very common because it's different, just different excesses of bile salts that don't have enough movement and support to flow out. So they get paired with cholesterol to kind of wrap as a bandage around these inflammatory elements like toxins. So these will naturally form in a body at any period of life. Even the WHO acknowledges that. And I feel like the WHO is like oftentimes behind and like a very conservative organization, you know? But even they say 21% of the world's population is going to have gallstones formed, and over 80% of those formed are not really dense at all. They're mostly cholesterol-based. Okay, This is good information for us to have. I actually think it's a lot higher than that, but you know, it's an outdated statistic. That's okay. We want to consider what these gallstones are made of because it's not just cholesterol, right? We started to hint at that. It could be too little bile salts or too much cholesterol or just sluggish bile flow. And with this paired with all of the toxicants we just named, mycotoxins from molds, endotoxins from parasites, all these inflammatory materials that are like really irritating to the bile ducts themselves, they inflame them on contact. So of course, your liver is going to want to bandage that up and try to create a buffer between itself and its delicate, hardworking tissues that are highly sensitive and the irritant. The problem is then it's like, okay, I'll deal with this later. I'm just going to wrap it in this cooling, soothing cholesterol. Oops, now I can't get this out fast enough. So it's a really smart short-term strategy, but unless we're using enough bile builders and bile movers and stone dissolvers that we used to naturally get in our diet. Bitters used to be a major thing, right, in our diet, in part to help thin out bile flow, like support that movement. That's not really a thing anymore, is it? So when we consider like what is next for you and what do you need if this feels resonant, yes, are concerned about your cholesterol or just wanting to be proactive about your liver, or if you had any of those symptoms that we talked about earlier, because when you think about it and the symptomology, the liver is often talking and expressing distress through these secondary systems, like your skin rashes that are so frustrating, adult acne, eczema, rosacea, like all those could just be the skin trying to act as a second liver for you, trying to catch up on excretion or acknowledging the fact that your liver is not keeping up with breaking down histamine fast enough because it's so overloaded. So of course, you're going to get rashy and histamine and flary in that regard. Or, you know, your liver isn't strong enough to support the immune system the way it needs to because it's overloaded with all these other issues. So yeah, your pathogens running wild. You got an overgrowth happening of some kind because you need more immune support to rebalance that immune response. All of those are different reasons for liver overload and for stress to express through the skin. And that's just the skin. Osteopenia, osteoporosis, why would that be? Any concerns about bone density? I always go, oh, immediately to the gut lining and bile flow. I want to know all about how those are doing for you, because if we can't move bile fast enough, then we cannot emulsify our fats in our foods. So even if you're eating so thoughtfully, we can't pick up those super important minerals, right? Those fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, K. We have to have those for bone strength. Michael had a bone density issue we found out the hard way from a clean bone fracture. Oof. Just broke off the top of his femur, extremely painful from a fairly gentle fall. As I think he was 40 at the time or 39 or something, but not that old, like very, very young, should have very strong bones, especially for somebody health obsessed that healed himself from chronic illness. That's how we discovered his bone density issues and harkened back to his liver overload that had built up over decades from, again, mold exposure, early Accutane. So pharmaceuticals can often slow down liver efficiency. It's just something to know. Doesn't mean that it's not the right move for you, but always consider what is a holistic plan to support the liver at the same time, right? So those are all things to consider. Maybe your liver is showing up with all this digestive distress or, you know, those fat issues or the temperament stuff. That's very real. When we consider what is the right next step for you, we have to first consider, how acute are your symptoms? Let's just check right now from a scale of 1 to 10, your stress, like your physical symptoms, 1 being like, I don't have any symptoms. I'm just hanging out because I love the body. All the way to 10, hey, Sinclair, my symptoms have my full attention. The shape and size of my life is exactly the shape and size my symptoms allow. That's not okay, is it? That's a really scary place to be. That was me for years. That's also going to determine how much support are you able to tolerate right now. If you want to go after this proactively, it's very different. That scale of symptom acuteness, like if you're going to measure how intense your symptoms are, it's actually very different from how motivated you are to feel better. You want to be in control, but the style and intensity of your detox absolutely needs to reflect how much support you can tolerate. That's a really, really important piece. So when you go to design your detox from here, yes, we're talking about fats today. And, you know, different food insights, very helpful, right? That's just good life support tips and tricks that you can take away from today. But we also want to be proactive with designing your own detox and you have different needs than the person next to you in terms of intensity and bile slow sludge and like bile flow itself and how to restore that. You have different drainage support needs. You have different mitochondrial support needs. You've got to add energy back into a system if you are feeling depleted before you add to your body's to-do list. Otherwise, this is not going to feel good. That is not going to feel very doable either. So you might need different detox system support than the person next to you in the chat. You might need different binders. And yes, I strongly encourage you to include stone breakers in your protocol. And when you consider that and how a real detox is built, and why and how all these factors put, like play together, suddenly it starts to make a lot more sense, right? Why other detoxes don't work or they haven't worked in the past. They didn't support your excretion. They didn't actually love up on your cholesterol and say, it's not bad. We don't want to run away from fats. We actually want to embrace fats. We just want to use them efficiently. We want to obsess about bile flow. We want to break up the sludge, but we want to add in more energy first before pushing a depleted body. How well do you think that's going to work, pushing a depleted body? Spoiler alert, it does not feel good. It is not worth it. But what we want to do is relax into healing, relax into detox, relax into release. That is what actually moves the needle. So that's the good news. So this is why other stuff hasn't worked. They didn't break up your stones and your sluggish bile. They probably used crummy binders and they didn't replenish your missing nutrients. That's okay. But that means you get to forgive your body for not doing so well on that other stuff. Can we give your body a free pass here and be supportive of it once more and be in partnership with your body from here on out? Because that is the most valuable thing you could take away from today is that decision to be in partnership with your body. And you may not understand what all the signals mean and how the symptoms got created yet, but if you commit to learning them, I promise you, your body will reward you. It is so freaking worth it. It's not even funny. Thanks for spending this time with us today. I know these conversations can bring up a lot, and I want you to have room to sit with what you learned and let it land in your own body. If you want more support or you're curious about the next step on your healing path, you can always connect with me. Find me on Instagram at TheDetoxNation and explore resources mentioned in this episode at detoxnation.com. This conversation is shared for education and personal reflection and isn't medical advice. Please always work with your trusted healthcare providers for your care. I'm really glad you're here, and I'll see you in the next episode.